Senate members on a conference position. It includes both the Department of Commerce and PUC, so if you want me to start with PUC, I'd say you have to go to page 8.
That is the agenda the way it was laid out, Mr. Reynolds. Why don't we stay with that? Why don't you do PUC first?
Page 8, then, these numbers. This is obviously part of a bigger spreadsheet, so the numbers at the bottom, there's the first pages are missing. But if you go to line 163, this will be the Public Utilities Commission section. And what I'm going to concentrate on is the area marked conference recs, the three columns, 2012-13. There was really is only one decision and change item in there. That's on line 171. What the conference recommendation here is showing is adopting what was the Senate position, which is a $750,000 increase in each of the years. Those are also tailed out into the 14 and 15. That was a governor's rec. It's titled Expediting Regulatory Decision Making. That item also then would be shown on line 219 of that spreadsheet under the transfers and revenues. The PUC runs where they assess back their costs, so this $750,000 each year expenditure is then matched by $750,000 each year in revenues. So if you go back to the PUC, the total on line 176, total expenditures recommended $12,364,000 for the 12 and 13 year. That, Mr. Chairman, would be the recommendations on the PUC.
Members, do we want to adopt the individual agencies? Is that fine? Why don't we move to Mr. Reynolds? What were you thinking? Were you going to go through them all and just adopt all the financial ones at one time? Maybe that would be easier.
Mr. Chair, it's usually easier to just adopt the spreadsheet or make amendments and then adopt the spreadsheet. Okay. I would suggest.
Okay, we're going to follow that. We'll go through the whole spreadsheet and adopt it at one time. Any questions on the PUC section? Mr. Reynolds, why don't you continue on to the next section?
Mr. Chair, then we move back to the page 6, which is the Commerce Department. And I'll move through really just the changes that are there rather than this starts out with a lot of the sort of the summary, but I'll move through the changes in by each one of the programs. The first one is on line 31. The conference recommendations there are to take the Senate position, which was a $350,000 increase in each year of the biennium for financial examination, increase activity. That is matched then, just as it was in the PUC, by a revenue item, and I will point the revenue items out just a little later, but that will be matched by revenues exactly the same. That is assessed back. The next division or department starts on line 41 in Commerce is the Petroleum Tank Cleanup Fund. Both the House and the Senate had the same position, which removed the sunset on that. So that program continues on in 13 and 14 and 15. So we had the same positions there. On 57 is the Administrative Services. Here on line 62, there's a general fund reduction. The conference committee recommendation is the House level. It shows up here larger what we did. The House had the reduction in two places. It had it in the administrative services and then in market insurance. Instead, we're moving it all up in to administrative services, but giving the department some language and a rider that will give them freedom to make some movement of those reductions throughout the department. Line 63 is recommended in the conference committee report. That was a Senate position. It's titled the Unclaimed Property Compliance. That is $375,000 in each year. That has revenue in excess of that amount, which I'll show when we get to the revenue summary, but that's being recommended in this as a position. Moving into the market assurance, which is down on 72, that's just the base, so you have to move to the next page to get where there were changes. On line 81, 82, and 83, those three lines were same positions on both House and Senate, so that is recommended in the conference report. Those are reductions as indicated there. Line 84 was a House-only general fund reduction. That's what I was just speaking to. That was moved up into the administrative services program at the same level as the House had it, and then with some language that gives the department freedom to move that. In the telecommunications program on line 96, there were no changes in either House or Senate, so that stays the same. In the Office of Energy Security, there are no changes in the conference report from the base amount. That is really the House position. In the telecommunications access portion, that begins on line 130. There are changes on line 136. The Office of Enterprise Technology there are three increased appropriations here. Both House and Senate had those, so it's the same position. It's an increase from the TAM funding of the Office of Enterprise Technology, the Commission on Deaf and Blind at the 20 in each year, and the Legislative Coordinating Commission website at 150 in each year. That's in the conference recommendations. Both sides were the same. Weights and measures in commerce, there were no changes to. So if you go to the next page, that really goes to the end of commerce, but I'll have to go. There were a lot of revenue changes in commerce, and those begin on line down on 199 on page 8, and I'll go through those one by one as far as what the recommendations of the conference report is. The assigned risk plan is recommended to have transfers to the general fund of $14 million in 2012 and $9 million in 2013. Telecommunications access, Minnesota, is recommended at $500,000 in each year. Excuse me, the TAP program is $500,000 in each year. The telecommunication access on 204 is $250,000 in 2013. The biogas RDF facilities grant or appropriation is canceled in the recommendations. That's $420,000 in 2013. An RDF program, Greenhouse Gas Advisory Group, is canceled and returned to the transfer to the general fund, $7,000 in 2012. The Hydrogen Roadmap Project, another RDF, $280,000 canceled in 12. The Green Economy Projects, $368,000 canceled in 12 to the general fund. The automotive technology projects canceled. That's $22,000 in 2012, once again to the general fund. Then the renewable energy efficiency project, $600,000, is canceled and returned to the general fund. Then there are some special revenue account transfers going into the general fund. On line 212, it begins. It's the energy conservation improvement account. $300,013 transferred to the general fund. The license technology surcharge account in commerce, $650,000 transferred to the general fund. And the insurance fraud prevention account, $950,000 canceled to the general fund. The auto theft prevention account, $1,500,000 canceled and sent to the general fund. Real estate research and recovery account on 216, $450,000 transferred to the general fund. And as I mentioned before, on a couple lines down below here, 219, 220 through 222, there are revenues. These are new revenues not transferred. The first one on 219 is the revenue that went along with the increased appropriations on the PUC. 220 is that was not adopted. That was a Senate rec, and a governor's position is not in the conference report. 221 is the assessment for the financial examiner's costs. That's $350,000 in each year of new revenue. And then the unclaimed property compliance in commerce, that was a Senate position adopted. That's $1,125,000 in the first year, $1,875,000 in the second. Mr. Chairman, that really is the next or the summary of the changes. I would just say that the net change shows up on page 8, line 185, you'll see the general fund expenditures net for the Department of Commerce says $40,936,000 in 12 and 13. For the PUC, $12,364,000. That's a total of $53,300,000. On line 192 are the revenue changes. That's $35,056,000. So there's a net effect to the general fund of $18,244,000. That's a summary of the Commerce and PUC items, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. When you say there's a net of $18,244,000 from which position, Mr. Reinholz?
Mr. Chairman, that is the net general fund effect of the that section of this bill.
Of the entire section. Thank you.
PUC and
questions on the commerce section. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing me to attend your committee as I kind of pay attention to the commerce and energy provisions. I have a question, though, probably for Mr. Reinholz, I believe. If I have his, I'm going to refer to page 8 of the spreadsheet, line 212. I just want to be sure I'm understanding about the energy conservation improvement accounts. The Mr. Reinholz, Mr. Chair, on line 212, just I want to be clear what it is that I'm seeing, Mr. Chairman, because I remember, I think in the House position, Representative Hilty and I had an amendment to add the search, we call them the search teams, to take them from the RDF fund and to fund them through the Commerce Department, I believe. And I think that the 300 and 300 per year was that provision. And I noticed the Senate had it in at 500 for the entire year. Are we adopting, is it the intent of your committee to adopt the House position? And Mr. Reinholz, am I reading that correctly, that there actually is an appropriation and conference committee report for 300 per year for the search teams?
Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Byrd, the line item on 212 is a cancellation, a transfer to the general fund of $300,000. There is an appropriation in the Senate bill to the certs program. I believe it's $500,000 at one time only.
Mm-hmm.
That I believe there will be an amendment that is not on the spreadsheet, but I believe there will be an amendment to adopt that portion of the Senate position.
Representative Beard, maybe you can remind us. This was a Beard-Hilty provision that we adopted on the environment.
I believe we did
finance bill.
Yes, on the environment finance bill in the House. To take them from the RDF and to appropriate money from somewhere else, as I recall. Mr. Chairman, sorry I don't have the file number in front of me, but it was actually a bill we introduced and was adopted as an amendment. I think Representative Hilty offered it, if I'm not mistaken.
Representative Beard, why don't we do some more follow-up? I see a puzzled look on some of the staff's face, so let's track down where that is and what the dollar amount is at this point. But let's assume the spreadsheet the way it is what we're doing, and let's see if we can get to the bottom.
All right.
What you're talking about, basically it sounds like it's similar, but we will have to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, I think the difference, Mr. Chair, was that the House had two appropriations, one for each year for $300,000. I see the Senate has one $500,000 appropriation one time. I'm sure they could work that difference out. It's not that big a deal, but...
Yep. Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify, the Senate appropriated out of the SIP R&D.
Yes.
So, and we also took it out of the RDF where it doesn't belong. It really belongs in the Conservation Improvement Program. So I think it's a worthy program that needs to continue on, but we just did it for one-time funding to continue.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Grant or one of the members from Commerce, did you have anything to add to this section? Any clarification on the do you have any recollection on the Beard-Hilty issue? No clarification. If you don't, that's okay. Okay, thank you. Members, we'll move on. We have additional spreadsheet items. Mr. Reinholz?
Mr. Chairman, the only item I would add is when I was going through the net general fund, I saw a few puzzled looks, and I think the Senate typically is looking at the reduction. The House is, we usually do our targets based on what's spent. But just for clarification for people, if you want to go to line 194, on page 8, follow that over to the conference recommendations where 212 and 213, I said the net effect was $18,244,000. That is a net spending effect. It also, the next item next to there is $35 million. I'm having trouble reading it. 268, I believe, was the reduction from the base that's in the conference recommendations here. Just so people that are used to looking at it as a reduction maybe have a better understanding of where we are on that.
And Mr. Reinholz, where would be the number we would see the conference committee report compared to House and Senate and the difference, whether it's higher or lower? Could you direct us to where that is? Just on this section, Mr. Reinholz, for instance, for the Commerce, if I'm not mistaken, I think I'm looking at it, but I want to be sure.
Mr. Chairman, for the spending there, you'll see that for the on line 188, as you follow over, you'll see a column titled Conference minus Senate shows it. That is $1,150,000 difference. You move over to Conference House, that was a negative. Then move over to Conference House, $1,450,000. So that spent is spending $1,450,000 more than the House did on the Commerce Department, cutting $1,150,000 more than the Senate did. So you can see we're somewhere in the middle there. That same thing holds true on the PUC. It's really the Senate position on the PUC. It shows $1,500,000 more spending on the PUC than the House had. That came from adopting that position up on line 177, expediting regulatory decision-making. And the big difference between the positions is on line 192. The conference committee recommendations have $718,000 less than the Senate had for their recommendations, but $17,056,000 more of revenue than the House had on their recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. I would Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could have some more clarification on the Telecommunications Access Minnesota account, the TAM account, line 204 from the department, if possible. I understand there's some... we had testimony in our hearing on March 24th of this year, and I understand that there's some problems with the $1.1 million that the Senate took out of that fund to appropriate to the deaf and blind.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. I think the agency is conferring right now as to who's going to come forward. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, Tim Janke, Commerce CFO. Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry, I was...
Thank you, Mr. Janke. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Janke, on the Telecommunications Access Minnesota on line 204.
Mr. Janke.
The Senate appropriated $1.1 million out of that.
Senator Rosen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And... apparently, just rumor has it, there are some problems with that agreement. We had Diane Wells from the department come and testify, manager of Telecommunications Division of the Commerce Department, testified on the balance of the TAM fund. And the TAM account is currently funded by a 10-cent per month phone line charge. And they were looking at reducing the surcharge to 4 cents. She said we would probably reduce it from 10 cents even if all this legislation is passed. So I'm just wondering, number one, is there some problems with this $1.1 million appropriation out of this fund? And number two, this does deal with the deaf, blind, and hard of hearing Minnesotans. What are we going to do about that?
Mr. Janke.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, what we had projected in the biennial budget system was to have about $600,000 left at the end of this current biennium. That contemplated moving the surcharge from 10 cents down to 4 cents. So in general, I would say that we would still have some room to move that surcharge down, but maybe not quite as far down as what we had proposed or what we were planning to do originally.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Janke, what is in the fund at this moment?
Mr. Janke.
At this moment, Mr. Chair and members, there's roughly $2 million in the account right now.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Janke. So on March 24th, and I don't mean to throw Diane Wells, Ms. Wells, under the bus, but she did say, quote, the fund is running a balance that would be able to support both Senator Dibble's amendment which this is, and other appropriation in the language in the delayed finance bill. Those were her comments. So is there comments currently to date about this appropriation, and are you having, as a department, problems with this $1.1 million?
Mr. Janke.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I don't believe, I mean, I think that we can deal with this. We can still reduce the surcharge, but it simply won't be reduced as much. But I think that the fund in general, we won't have cash flow problems in the short term, and we can in general deal with that change over time.
Thank you, Mr. Janke. Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I could go through what that appropriation would be used for, if that clarifies how it's going to be divvied up. Never mind. That's for another fund. That's a TAP fund. So this is a cancellation out of the general fund. So.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Additional questions on the Commerce section? Additional question on the Commerce section? Members, I did entertain a motion to adopt the Commerce section or the spreadsheet. You're completely through the spreadsheet. We're not ready yet. Senator Rosen.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would like to I'm not sure if it's in order to make a motion to accept the Senate's position on the TAM line 204, the $1.1 million, instead of the $250,000. Are you ready for motions, or are we just going to go ahead and accept?
No, Senator Rosen, you want to make a motion to change the spreadsheet? Am I understanding your request?
Yes, please.
Okay, and you want to make an oral amendment? And can you direct us to, do you want to read it back?
I would like to, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make an oral amendment to line 204, Telecommunications Access Minnesota, and to change the appropriation to $1.1 million in the Senate position.
Additional discussion. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say something to make sure everyone's clear what we're doing. The $1.1 million is a transfer to the general fund, not technically appropriation. The appropriations from the TAM fund are back up on lines 136 through 138. So there's two things going on with the TAM fund, and I just want to make sure everyone is comfortable with what's going on between both of them. What Senator Rosen is talking about is taking $1.1 million and transferring that to the general fund on line 204, which is above what the House had at 250. And then the other part from the TAM fund is the new appropriations on line 136 through 138. And that both the House and the Senate had. That's actual spending, not money being transferred. So there's two things going on at the TAM fund. I just want to make sure everyone was comfortable with that.
Additional discussion to the Rosen oral amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Reinholz.
Just to add, so people understand, the House position originally was put together where there would be no fee increases driven by the positions taken by the House. Adopting this position, as you heard in the testimony from the Department of Commerce, will raise the assessment from what the base assessment was planned to be. So just so House members are clear that they are voting at this time to raise the assessment, very likely to raise the assessment on the telephone, your telephone.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Mr. Janke, could you come back up? Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Reinholz, I guess I disagree because the department had not dropped that assessment down to the 4 or 6 cents. They testified at 6 cents. Now it seems like it might be 4 cents, but that is the 10 cents is already being assessed. So we're just keeping it, and they could actually drop it down still, even with this appropriation. Back in March, the fund was running a balance of $3.1 million. And now Mr. Janke says it's $2 million. I'm not sure if some things have been appropriated out of that fund here recently in the last month, but we are not raising a fee. It's not going to go up. It's going to stay stable and even perhaps drop down, maybe perhaps not as much as it was going to, but we are certainly not raising a fee or raising raising it up any higher than where it's at this point.
Mr. Jenke, there was going to be an agency proposal to reduce this fee from 10 cents to 4 cents, evidently. And do you have a dollar amount that could be transferred from the fund that would still allow you to lower the fee down to 4 cents?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have that information here available right now. In essence, we had proposed, had sent some information over to the PUC to request a decrease. I don't have the exact dollar amounts or the exact figure on that, but my recollection was as it was moving down to either 6 or 4 cents for the upcoming period. And that request had gone over to the PUC, but I'm not sure where that is in the process right now.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jenke, with this appropriation into the general fund, the $1.1 million, can you still lower the fee to 6 cents?
Mr. Jenke.
Mr. Chair, member, or Senator Rosen, I'm not certain. We'd have to look at that to see. But my thought is, in general, that we can likely reduce the fee a bit, but I don't know if we can get all the way down. I can't remember if our proposal was to move to 6 or 4 cents currently, so I'd have to look that up and see.
Okay, because Mr. Jenke, I thought you testified just a little bit ago that you probably would lower it to 6 cents based on Senator Rosen's amendment. Was that not true, Mr. Jenke?
Mr. Chair, what I was trying to say, and I maybe didn't come out well, is that I think we would probably likely be able to lower it somewhat, but maybe not all the way down to what we had proposed, either that 6 or 4 cents, and I'm sorry, I can't remember which dollar or which amount it is.
So you would be cutting the fee if we took Senator Rosen's oral amendment?
We could likely make some incremental changes in it, but maybe not down to where we had proposed in the information we sent to the PUC.
The incremental change would be down?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Yep. Additional discussion to the Rosen oral amendment to lower the fee and transfer money to the general fund. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment's adopted. Next, members, if there's additional discussion to the spreadsheet, otherwise we'd attend. We would. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted just to make a clarification here that if the spreadsheet's being moved, the commerce sections, that I want to make sure we're not moving lines 213 through 216. Is that correct? Those would be the fund transfers on lines 213 to 216.
Senator
holding
Gerlach.
Holding those out for temporarily?
No, Senator Gerlach, in my haste to move things through, we have not done those line items yet. We would like to do those line items before. So if it's all right, Senator Gerlach, why don't we have Mr. Reinholz walk through those? As long as we're through PUC and Commerce, why don't we go through these transfers and revenue? I think you have some questions on some of those specifically.
Sure.
But if it would be all right, Mr. Reinholz, do you want to walk through the changes on those?
Mr. Chairman, members, I did go through those at the end there.
Mr. Reinholz, I'm glad
I'm
paying attention.
I know I talked kind of fast, but
I'm glad
I would
both
be
Senator
happy to
Gerlach
questions.
And I are both paying attention.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Gerlach.
No, my question was not if we had gone through them or not. My question is if we're going to be moving the spreadsheet, that today I would not like to do lines 213 through 216. If you remember at our previous conference committee hearing, at the end, you had requested some additional information from our from Council and Research on those funds. We've also been working on trying to track and get a full understanding of the balances that are going to be left and what it would be used for some of these grants and how that would be used and to square some things with some testimony before. So we want a full understanding of these before we adopt any positions on those lines 213 through 216. So I just wanted to make sure that whatever we do today, we are not adopting any position on those four lines, if we can have a little more time on that.
Senator Gerlach, it was our intention to adopt those lines, and I guess I first would like to allow you to have discussion here, but it was the intention to adopt those lines. Senator Gerlach.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I will start off, and I just wanted to we wanted some clarification on the auto theft prevention account first. We heard some testimony that they would not be able to offer any grants But based on kind of tracking through the dollars, I don't see that. I see us taking a carryover fund balance, but there's still money there to do the grants for the auto theft prevention. And I think that you were also, Mr. Chairman, were looking for some information on that. And so I thought it would be good to get some testimony or clarification exactly with what I think is going on with the Auto Theft Prevention Fund, because we want to make sure we know what we're doing with that eyes wide open.
Senator Gerlach, we will ask the agency to come forward. I believe it's currently in the Department of Commerce, and you administer that. If you could talk about how the grant program works, we had some testimony about how it is and what money is available. Welcome back, Mr. Jenke. If you could let us know if you're going to be doing grants in the coming year and if they would be similar to what we're done in the past. Mr. Jenke.
Mr. Chair, members, we had projected in the biennial budget system about a $1.5 million at the end of this biennium, given the current granting levels and current functionality in the account. So my understanding from the spreadsheet is that the $1.5 million would come off of that balance. I guess just in general, I would say that there would be some granting activities over the next year or over the biennium.
Right.
But we likely wouldn't have as high of levels as we would have. So we wouldn't want to spend that account down to zero at the end of that time period. So we would likely have some granting, but it would be at a lower level.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke. Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jenke, and again, I apologize. I was still under the impression that we were kind of still working this out, and I had talked to Senator Ingebrigtsen on the floor earlier today, and I thought we were going to be able to continue working on these four accounts. So Mr. Jenke hasn't seen this, but I asked my staff to map out exactly the inflows and the outflows of the Auto Theft Prevention Fund, and what I'm showing is that the grants would be at the same level for the biennium, that there wouldn't be a reduction. But the impact of us taking the $1.5 million would be that the carryover to fiscal year 2014 would be reduced, but that there's sufficient inflows to maintain the same level of grants as has been done in the past 2 years. I mean, going forward, as has been done in the past. And I apologize, you haven't had a chance to look at this, so I'd like to have Mr. Jenke take a look at this. If you can, to make sure that what I'm looking at is the same thing he's looking at. And the point is, Mr. Chairman, is that I want to be sure that we are not unduly hampering this fund. At least, you know, I mean, in this coming biennium, of which we're trying to put this budget together. Otherwise, if maybe, you know, Mr. Jenke did say that there would be grants, but they wouldn't be as much. Now, that is in contradiction to the testimony we had from some of the law enforcement and the county attorney folks. I think they said that there would be zero grants in the coming biennium. That's what I believe the testimony was at our last hearing. So, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure, because we had some conflicting information. I don't know why. Did you give a copy?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
Senator Gerlach, how about if we leave the line 215, the auto theft one, as it is now, and we are not going to be naturally completely done today.
Okay.
Maybe we should allow Mr. Jenke and the agency to get back to us rather than get bogged down here. You've raised some questions. You've got some information for him to look at. And why don't we confirm that they will be able to do grants at the level they've been doing them at? I think that's what you want to be sure, that they can continue to do them at the level they've been doing them at, well, and be sure that the fund will be solvent at the end of the biennium.
Well, Mr.
Senator Gerlach.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, not necessarily that they would be able to do them at the level they've been doing them, but the testimony we heard was that they would be able to do zero grants. Now, that's very dramatic. And that was the testimony we had, not from the department. That was from some of the law enforcement folks and the county attorneys that testified last time in this conference committee. And so that concerned me, that there would be zero grants going forward. So I just want to make sure that what I'm looking at here and what the department is looking at, that there's a level of grants for the auto theft prevention going out. I just want to make sure that we're that, but not that they're necessarily the same level, but substantially. Does that make sense?
Mr. Janke?
Mr. Chair and Senators, this is a lot to digest in a minute here, so if we can have some time to look at it, that would be preferential.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I was just going to call on you. Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chairman, House and Senate fiscal staff did look at all these items. We do have what the balance in. We do have their revenue. On this particular one from the biennial budget system, the dollars loaded in by the department, the department estimated $3,448,000 worth of grants. Those are the numbers we use. That the balance coming out in the department's estimate was $1,544,000. The conference committee recommendation is to transfer $1,500,000 of that. So it does not reducing this position in this conference committee recommendation is keeping the grants at $3,448,000 for the biennium, which is what was forecasted by the department.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Mr. Mueller, do you agree with you? Could you, for the record, speak?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I agree with Mr. Reinholz.
Okay. Senator Gerlach, both fiscal staff said we're on the same page. The agency's digesting it yet, but they gave our fiscal staff the information. Are we good enough to go?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Then I'm
thank you,
very
Senator.
Pleased by that, yes.
Thank you, Senator Gerlach. Additional questions? Senator Gerlach, you asked about a couple other line items. Are you okay there? Senator Gerlach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we had some discussions earlier about being able to maybe have some movement on these. If that's not possible, then in your estimation, then we can certainly go ahead and move those. We had just had some previous discussions, and I did also with Senator Ingebrigtsen earlier today on that. But if it's if you feel confident that these are the numbers we've got to go with, then I'm okay with that.
Senator Gerlach, we were going to adopt this, but I got to be honest, this conference committee is not getting wrapped up today.
Okay.
But I certainly will honor any members' wishes to specifically speak to say that you'd like to have the chance to talk about it. You are going to have a chance to talk about everything, but we are trying to move in a very positive direction as we're getting closer and closer to May 23rd. Senator Gerlach.
Okay. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, if that is the case, those are just four lines that I would like to hold. But if we're good with the auto theft prevention one, then we have clarification on that. Then line 215 is fine. But 213, 214, and 216, those are ones that still I would like to continue to do some more digging on to make sure we're doing the right thing. So I would ask your indulgence in holding back on those three lines then for today.
That's fine, and I would suggest any members on the conference committee talk with our fiscal staff, because if I'm not mistaken, all of these line items we are the same on, if I'm not mistaken. So am I correct on that, Mr. Reinholz? Both you and Mr. Mueller have the same numbers on them.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The numbers that are in the conference report are all based on the Department of Commerce's loading of base budgets into there. None of the numbers, if they would adopt it, would decrease any expenditures that were planned in the base budget. We were taking what is commonly referred to as the balance at the end of the biennium.
Mr. Mueller. Oh.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, the numbers weren't the same in both bills. What we have loaded here on the conference column, at least for the automobile theft prevention account, that was the same in both sides. But what's listed here now is the higher number that was on the Senate side. The House had lower transfers for the three line items that Senator Gerlach mentioned. So they're not the same, but they are within room of what the balance is, we think, is available. So,
yes, and Mr. Mueller, I apologize. I was speaking after additional discussion between our staff and yours. You're correct. On the original bills that passed off the floor, they were different. Additional discussion to the spreadsheet. Senator Rosen.
I'm sorry, I must be losing my mind, but what did we decide on the certs? Are we going to wait until we figured out where it was at in the House, or can I go ahead and make a motion on the Senate language? Because I'm not sure what your preference is, Mr. Chair, on that, on the certs.
On the language? Senator Rosen.
For the appropriation that is not there, but Representative Beard said there was some kind of House agreement.
Senator Rosen, this spreadsheet would adopt your Senate's $500,000 spending in this item, and it would adopt the $300,000 transfer. And then at the same time, we will have the agency work with Representative Beard and Representative Hilty to find out if there is some issue somewhere with what Representative Beard is recollecting. The department didn't seem to remember that issue. Is this making sense? I'm wrong.
No, Mr. Chair, I think you're right. We just had a private conversation with Representative Beard, and I didn't know what was said. So Mr. Mavis was just telling me, but do we have to adopt the language then, or just the spreadsheet is fine at this point?
We're just doing the spreadsheet at this point, Senator Rosen, and I'm glad I had Representative Beard come to clarify everything up and we got it all settled. It's good he was here that we ended up with no questions. I'm saying that sarcastically, folks. So anyway. And Representative Rosen, if I'm not mistaken, you have made a motion, and I actually, did we not adopt your oral motion?
Mr. Chair, we did adopt the $1.1 million transfer for TAM.
Okay. And Senator Gerlach has asked us to keep in mind that after we adopt this, there will be additional discussion potentially on the spreadsheet. Am I correct, Senator Gerlach?
Well, Mr. Chairman, is it your intention then to actually move those lines that I had cited as maybe a hold off? Did you want to, was your intention to still move them? I'm a little concerned about, I know that this conference committee isn't buttoned up and there's always room to make changes, but I'm a little concerned that if we adopt, we adopt a position, lines on the spreadsheet, we agree to that, and it makes it harder if there's an opportunity to make any adjustments later. So that's why I just wanted to impose a little caution on these.
Senator Gerlach, do you want us to not adopt certain lines? I mean, we did hear testimony, but if you want to make a motion to not adopt specific lines, why don't you make that motion, and then we
Mr.
can
Chairman,
hold
I
w- on
I
that.
Mr. I would like us to not adopt lines 213, 214, and 216.
Senator Gerlach has made a motion to not adopt 213, 214, and 215.
This time.
And at this time, Senator Gerlach, I will accept that as much as I would like to get going, but you've raised some questions. Additional discussion to Senator Gerlach's oral amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, I believe it was 16, not 15. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, 213? 214 and 216.
Yes, you said 15. That's
right. Oh, you're okay with 15.
I'm okay with 215, the auto theft prevention account. That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senator Gerlach's oral amendment not to adopt those three lines at this time. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. No. Okay, Senator Gerlach's oral amendment to not deal with those three lines at this time, we will not. To the spreadsheet. Senator Rosen.
So, Mr. Chair, we adopted the $1.1 million out of for TAM, but we have not done the CERTS $500,000 because yours is in there, but we haven't adopted the $500,000 for CERTS. Is that correct? And
Senator Rosen, if we adopt the spreadsheet, we will be adopting the $500,000. It is on this spreadsheet. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, it's over on the Senate column. We should probably make it clear that move the $500,000 at the Senate position onto the conference column so that it's part of the. And then when we adopt a spreadsheet, we'd make sure. Or we just say we move the Senate language on page R40 of the side-by-side. We could also do that as part of the overall motion.
Mr. Mueller and Senator Rosen, let's put this one aside, get it resolved with Representative Beard, and we'll take it up at that time.
Okay.
So at this time, we will not adopt that part of the spreadsheet.
Okay.
Additional discussion to the spreadsheet. All those in favor of adopting the spreadsheet, less the items Senator Rosen's talked about and Senator Gerlach, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, the spreadsheet's adopted without those, I believe, four items that we will take up at another day. Next, we have a couple of amendments to act on. We have the A43 amendment, which is the auto theft program. And this was the auto theft program to move the auto theft. I think it was one of the senators that was interested in doing this from Commerce to Public Safety. Was that you, Senator Gerlach?
You're talking about the A43 amendment?
The A43.
Mr. Chairman, that's a it was a House amendment, so I don't know if it belonged to somebody in the House. I'm familiar with the subject, and it makes some sense, so I was going to speak to it. But I didn't know if somebody in the House had drafted this to offer. If not, Mr. Chairman, I'll offer it.
Okay, thank you. Senator Gerlach moves the A43 amendment. Does someone from either Commerce or Public Safety want to speak to it? It does transfer. We did have some discussion on this, Senator Gerlach. I think it's a good amendment. It gets this really as a public safety issue. We heard the testimony from the different law enforcement people. It is collected on insurance premiums, as most folks know, and that's why it was in Commerce. But the thoughts would be that the actual grant program would be better administered over at Department of Public Safety. If you could identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Carlson. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Commerce for Administration. We actually just received this when you all sat down about 45 minutes ago, Mr. Chair, and so this is news to us. In terms of the approach, I guess the one thing I would suggest is that we generally do administer these funds that are collected by insurance companies where activities go forward. My understanding, long before my time, was this was at one time in the Department of Public Safety and was transferred over to Commerce a number of years ago for reasons I do not know, but perhaps some of you are familiar with why. But I guess at this point, I would simply express don't know why this is happening, don't understand the point of it. From our perspective, we have police agents in our insurance fraud unit who are the ones that are involved in managing this activity. So we don't understand what the point of the amendment is.
Well, the one thing I would say, Commissioner Carlson, is we did hear from law enforcement, and it seemed like there was some confusion in the grant application for them understanding it. And I think there was discussion that maybe this should be in public safety and it might make more sense. Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman, I'll tell you what, again, I didn't draft this amendment here today, but I shared the idea. In fact, I voiced the idea that why do we even have this in Commerce or in our jurisdiction, committee jurisdiction. And what really underscored that was when we took the fund balance, the people that came to petition against that, I was in a room full of about 19 county sheriffs and law enforcement individuals from all over the state of Minnesota, and I couldn't help but thinking, why am I the Commerce Chair sitting here with law enforcement talking about law enforcement issues? This should be judiciary or public safety issue. And although the Commerce Department handles the finance mechanism, simply because this is charged on insurance policies, but as far as the program itself, when something is changed with the fund, that should be a matter for the jurisdiction of the Public Safety Committee and the Department of Public Safety. So this, again, although I did not prepare this, somebody else clearly was thinking the same thing I was because they prepared it, and that's the rationale for it.
Additional discussion. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I understand where Senator Gerlach's coming from. There's some other things, too, that it seemed to make good sense. I think in previous legislation it would be the E911 dollars that are collected and put into the Department of Public Safety for PSAPs and whatnot. But I guess I would suggest that we put an effective date of June 30th, 2013. I'd like to throw that out there for discussion, giving it a little more time. I'd like to know how the testifier would react to that.
Commissioner Carlson, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Chairman Ingebrigtsen, that would be preferable from our perspective.
Thank you. Does staff have, I see Ms. Taylor's gone, but Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the Senator Ingebrigtsen has a good idea. I was going to ask, I'm just curious to see what the Department of Public Safety would say about this. And I think if we do put this out, a couple years for the implementation date, it gives everybody a chance to weigh in and figure out whether we really do want to do this or not.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Any additional discussion? Mr. Eloff, did you catch Senator Ingebrigtsen's oral amendment, and do you want to read back where it would fit in?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Eloff.
If I can ask Senator Ingebrigtsen, was that June 30th, 2013?
2013.
Members have the oral amendment. All those in favor of the Ingebrigtsen oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The oral amendment's adopted to the Senator Gerlach A43 amendment. Additional discussion to the A43. All those in favor of the A43 say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The A43 is adopted. Next, we have the A44 amendment. Not ready for the A44 amendment yet. Okay, Ms. Taylor, you're back now. Why don't we hold off on the A44? I think we'll start going through the policy that we've are ready to adopt. Ms. Taylor's just getting situated. Next, members will go through the policy. And do folks have the spreadsheet too? Sorry, Ms. Taylor, if you want to direct us to where you're at.
Mr. Chair and members, and I believe all the members have a copy of a spreadsheet that looks familiar. It's the comparison, and now there's sort of updated information in the action column. And this is sort of our tentative idea of what the conference committee would like to adopt. And I'm just going to start going through, and I'm going to start on page R3. There was a house-only rider requiring grant recipients to display information on their website, and as my understanding, the conference committee would just like to leave that, and that would remain out, so we could skip ahead unless someone would like to move it.
Okay, did everybody get what Ms. Taylor said?
Adopt them like that,
that she will read them, and if no one speaks up, we'll give time, and then maybe Ms. Taylor, I'll just tell you we'll move on. And then the audience will understand that one is not getting adopted. So did you do the first one, Ms. Taylor? Okay. And the next one, I see no discussion. Ms. Taylor.
The next one would be on R17. This is a house rider requiring the DNR divisions to reimburse the Division of Forestry.
And Ms. Taylor, we have done this where, okay, what... We can move that, and then you can go to the next one. I'll move the house position. It's a house only, so I guess do I just... Representative Deal, you have a lot more experience with this. Am I doing okay?
This is fine. We okay. Want to move that language, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Taylor. Then we'll adopt... we have to do those one at a time. Okay. If we moved on... Ms. Taylor, we moved on from R3 because nobody moved it.
Right.
So then if we say we're moving the House position, can you go to the next one? We move the House position. Then when we adopt Article 1, wouldn't we be adopting only the two that got moved?
We can do that, yeah.
Does that work, Ms. Taylor? Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, we can do that. You can, if you want to just go through the entire document and make any changes to what has been agreed to and then move the document when we're done.
Great idea, Ms. Taylor. We will do what you said. So we will move the House position on R17. Ms. Taylor.
And then next is R20. It's our understanding that the House position would be moved. This is on R20. This would prohibit the DNR from closing state parks that are funded in the bill.
We'll move the House position. Discussion. Next on to Article 2. Ms. Taylor.
Article 2, it's our understanding that the language on the Co-op Electrical Association signature 1% petition threshold is going to stay out of the conference.
I see no one discussing that one. You'll move on. It will not be adopted.
The next is on R41 and 42. This is the Advisory Committee for Technology Standards for Accessibility and Usability. It's our understanding that the House position would be moved here.
further discussion. Ms. Taylor, you're going to do a lot better you telling us what's going on than me keep repeating it. Okay. So we will let you do it, and we will give time when the ones are out. I will repeat the ones that are out is okay. What we'll do. We are getting it down now, Ms. Taylor. Go ahead.
All right. The next two can be skipped because we've already adopted them. R43, the State Forest Campground Receipts to Natural Resources Fund. The House position, as our understanding, would be moved. Next.
We'll keep going, Ms. Taylor. Members, I'll look for questions, but if it's all right with everybody, I'm not going to stop at everyone and look for members' questions. Ms. Taylor.
Next would be R43 and 44, the Peace Officer Training Account. It's our understanding that the Senate position would be moved without the statutory appropriation.
Okay.
R44, the Forest Management Investment Account. It's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Okay.
The next page on R44. There's house-only language on the small game license surcharge, creating a whole bunch of statutory appropriation for this. It's our understanding the House position would be moved.
Yes.
And then R44 and through R47 is another section on license stamp fee statutory appropriation. Our understanding the House position would be moved.
Yes.
And then the next one we can skip, or the next three actually can be skipped as they've already been adopted. And then the next would be R50, and this is where the A44 amendment would come into play.
Members, I would like to move the A44 amendment to the on R50 of our document. It deals with putting a cap. Our language originally reverted back to the original DNR language. They were actually in the middle of some rulemaking. This would allow, it's an effort for these fees to be balanced, and the money they charge on the fees would be used for the services. This would put a cap in place that would be substantially lower than currently. Currently, we had some testimony of a group that could have 100 members, and their fee would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $9,000. This would have put a cap on the fee more in line with what actual costs would be for the group. So we wouldn't have groups subsidizing individuals is basically we would have made the DNR subsidize individuals' costs by charging groups more, and we didn't think that was fair. We tried to find a compromise here that made groups pay a fair price and individuals. Discussion to the A44. All those in favor of the A44 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A44 is adopted. Ms. Taylor, to the amended A44, and if you could remind us what line we're on.
Well, back to the spreadsheet, we're on the section electronic waste registration fees, and you'll see the next four sections have already been adopted, so we can skip those. So the next one would be on R55 and 56, another peace officer training account. It's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Okay.
The next is on the wild rice quality standards on R56 and 57. It's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Okay.
The next is R57 and 58, the repealers. There's a number of things going on here, so at this point we're leaving this open at this time.
All right.
R101 and R102, it's our understanding this is current law and is not going to be dealt with here. R102, S&A exchanges, and then the next one, S&A master plan requirements. These are in the policy bill and are expected to be handled there, as our understanding.
Ms. Taylor, if I could stop, just especially for members of the audience. A number of these are policy discussions that are in different policy bills, both in the Senate and the House, and we're trying to clarify that this is the environment finance bill, and it will concentrate mostly on finance issues. So don't be surprised to see a number of policy issues coming out of this. It's not a position that we're not going to be doing them, but they are in other bills. So that's why a number of these policy issues are coming out. Yeah, and Ms. Taylor, I want to step back to two. I'm going to refer to them on house lines in sections 18 and 19, the wild rice standards. We did not mean to do anything on those. They would be similar to the one when you said they will be left blank. I would like to move that we not adopt either of the wild rice things. The wild rice situation, as they say, is fluid. And so we would like to preserve that. Representative Dill, I know you're working real hard on the issue, and we'd rather let you be able to work on it than throw a curveball at this time. So members, looking at the House section line items, 18, 19, wild rice, and repealers, we will not be taking up at this time. Ms. Taylor, if I'm not mistaken, you were on one of the next ones on some policies that we were not adopting. Continue on, Ms. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. R-103, the force for the future conservation easement account, it's our understanding this would be handled in the legacy bill.
Continue on.
R-103 and 104, the non-resident or the state trail pass, it's our understanding the Senate position would be taking as.
Yes, continue.
R-104, R-105, ATV safety education and training, our understanding is it would not be dealt with in this bill.
Correct.
The next one, R-105, the invasive species water rec account transfer. This is attached to money and won't be handled at this time.
It will not be done at this time, correct.
R-105, R-106, the use of vehicles on ATV and OHM trails will be handled later, as would R-106, the reduction of match requirement for regional chair grants, and the next reduction of match requirement for trail connection grants. These would be handled in the policy.
Continue.
R-106, Cedar River added to the state water trails, would be handled in the policy bill.
Yes.
R-107 and the vehicles on unsafe ice in the next section, permits for snowmobile water cross events. It's our understanding the Senate position would be accepted here.
Correct.
In the next page, on R-107 and R-108, the forest management investment accounts cross-reference, it's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Okay.
R-108, the membership of the Mineral Coordinating Committee and also the extension, the next section, it's our understanding this would be handled in the policy bill, as would the citizen oversight committees. The next section on R-110, license permit lottery preference for certain service members, it's our understanding this would be handled in the Game and Fish bill, as would the next section, deer killed by motor vehicles. Scopes on muzzleloaders, the deer stand height restrictions, portable stands on WMAs, bear permit drawings, the road authority beaver control, the Northern Pikes special management waters cap, these would all be handled in the Game and Fish bill.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. All those are out of this bill. Continue, mm-hmm. Ms. Taylor.
Ms. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Okay, we're going fast. I'm trying to keep up and read. Can we back up to R-107, Section 22, for a moment?
Back to R-107. Members, that would be, Representative Dill, why don't we get members on the page? That would be in our
107.
R-107 of our document. Representative Dill.
Section 21. We had I'm trying to keep up with which way we do here. So is this being included for adoption then or not? It's going to be handled in another bill. Section 21. I thought I heard you say we were adopting the Senate language.
Representative Dill, we did adopt the Senate language in what you are talking about. Representative Dill.
Yes,
the Senate language in Section 24.
No, I'm talking about Section 21 and 22. On R-107.
Sorry, Representative Dill, I was in the wrong spot.
There is no House language.
We did accept the Senate position, Representative Dill. We were concerned about you getting your income tax filed on time. That's a House joke that only the House members know about. I don't know if you want to. We need to lighten this meeting up today, Representative Dill. So could you maybe give us that story again?
Mr. Chairman, when you live on an island and April 15th is near the ice out, and you have to go get a document or they threaten you, you go across the ice on a snowmobile. That's all I'm going to say. We had a good discussion on that. But we deleted this from the from the House bill and from the other bill where the language was located in the DNR technical bill. We deleted this language, and so by accepting this language, I think that we defeat what we did in the House in another bill. You know, and the problem here, Mr. Chairman, is that if you'll read this, it says on line 310, having obtained a written permit from the sheriff, and it says up there in the change language, snowmobile watercross event or practice session. Well, that has been defined up in our area as anyone who uses a snowmobile on open water for purposes of practicing for a watercross. They have to get insurance. The sheriff won't issue a permit, and this language would read, without getting insurance covering the state. It would eliminate the most popular event where families come and do barbecues, and this language is not acceptable, and I think that Representative Hackbarth would have something to say about that as well. We would like to stay with the current situation, and we had a lengthy discussion on this in the House committee.
Representative Deal, if I understand right, you'd like to move our spreadsheet so that we were going to adopt the Senate language. You would like it to be out.
I don't want any of this language in any bill in the House of Representatives or the Senate.
Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is correct, and we did discuss this. It was in your committee where we took that out of the out of your technical bill that is now out for comparison in the House.
Thank you. Representative Hackbart, Representative Deal. We are going to change the spreadsheet to say out. We're going to adopt it at the end, members, so it's not like us unilaterally, three of us. Any more discussion on Ms. Taylor? We will now change this to say out. Members, we are on the bottom of the page where it was Senate Sections 21 and 22 on page R107. Those two items are out, and we had gone down farther. Thank you, Representative Dill, for slowing us down here a little bit and making sure we're doing the right thing. You ready, Ms. Taylor? You got a break.
Mr. Chair, members, picking up, we're on Senate Section 42 on R113, the PCA enforcement funding. It's our understanding that this is going to remain open at this time because it's connected to
correct.
Money.
We are not dealing with that now.
On R13, the livestock mortalities, our understanding is this out because a similar provision has been adopted into law. The NPDS feedlot permits, it's our understanding this is an open issue. On R116, the feedlot permits and the animal unit determination.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, do you want to deal with amendments now or later?
Representative Torkelson, why don't we do your amendment now if it
yes, I have an amendment coded GK0010. I believe everyone has it. It would replace the language that the Senate adopted. The purpose, as I understand it, of
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of this amendment, as I understand it, is to simplify the process and line us up with federal rules and regulations, and if there are more detailed questions, I believe there are testifiers in the audience who might be able to help clarify the situation.
Questions on the GK0010? Representative Torkelson, did you say there? I see some agency folks coming forward. Mr. Kudelka, if you'd want to come forward and speak to the GK0010. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We just had a chance to look at the amendment, and we're trying to find a few things out. On previous amendments, there has been stated that these facilities would still need an SDS permit, and we're reviewing to see if that would be the case under rules or if this would allow for these facilities to have not get a permit. That's something we're clarifying. It still creates a situation, unfortunately, where we'll set up farmers and gotcha situations. The understanding here, there's two type of dispersals in this discharges in this permit. One is the planned, which is managed, which is used a lot of times for wastewater facilities that's known But then there's also the accidental situations where a farmer may be, where they're covered under this, where they wouldn't be from third-party lawsuits. And what we get that from is currently under the Federal Register, any discharges from a CAFO, even one that is unplanned accidental, is still illegal unless it's authorized by the terms of a permit or is agricultural stormwater. So we have a situation here where, unfortunately, we're going to set up farmers who believe they did need this situation, a heavy rainstorm or some other situation where they do have an accidental discharge. They would be open to third-party lawsuits, which with this permit they would be protected from under the Clean Water Act. And that's a concern of ours, is that this is going to create more confusion.
Comment. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, by definition, these feedlots do not discharge. And if you'd look at the end of the amendment, if they would choose to apply for an NPDES permit, they can.
Testimony from anybody else in the audience? We should take testimony if there is. Mr. Schoenfeld, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Pork Producers. Exactly what Representative Torkelson had just indicated, there's a provision in here, and it always has been in the Senate side, that says that if a farmer wants to apply in order to obtain that protection, that he can do so. And it's the last sentence, I think, of the amendment.
Any additional testimony for or against the amendment? All those in members, discussion. All those in favor of the GK0010 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative Torkelson, are you ready to adopt the Senate positions then on sections R113 through R116? Representative Torkelson.
We have, I want to make sure I get this all straight, Mr. Chair. We also have another amendment. It's coded A11-0460 and deals with the feedlot permit issue that is Senate Section 47, page R116. And we would not adopt the Senate language in Section 47 and instead adopt the language that is on the amendment.
Members or agent, members, discussion to the A110460 amendment. Mr. Kadelka or industry, do you have any comments on this amendment?
Actually, or proposed. Takes care of everything.
Thank you, and I appreciate Mr. Kadelka. I'm trying to slow myself down. You know, I got this problem my mom always talked about, and so I'm trying hard to slow down. Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have a concern about this, as we expressed earlier in our letters to the Senate members, as it was included in their finance bill. The situation here dealing with when they actually, the difference between capacity being built at and counting the numbers, we create a situation where two facilities could be built exactly the same. For instance, Farmer A is next to Farmer B, builds the same capacity, but at the start of it, Farmer A decides, I'm only going to put X number of animal units in there. What happens then is which may not trigger the environmental review or certain requirements. Farmer B, who then goes about doing that, goes to the environmental review, goes through, does the extra requirements needed because of the higher capacity, they're being treated differently. And then Farmer A can then change the number of animals in there at a later date, which would allow them to bypass the environmental review. Our concern is dealing with number, using that as animal units. Number two is that all of our permits on NPDES permits and such deal with capacity and others too. Whether it's a wastewater system for a municipality, it's built on the maximum capacity that's built to handle, not how much water is actually flowing through, because at times there, many of them don't go to that top point at all the way through. And I think I'll just leave my comments at that for right now.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Referring to the example that Mr. Kadelka presented to you, it may very well be that Farmer A decides that in his particular feedlot he chooses to give his animals more space and never intends to fill that to what this arbitrary capacity number is. And Farmer B may choose to crowd his animals more closely together and reach that capacity. And in fact, if Farmer A at a later date decided that he was going to increase the capacity over the threshold, he would then be subject by law to go through the permitting process. He would, if he didn't, it's my understanding, he'd be breaking the law. Would you agree with that, Mr. Kadelka?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, right now the agency receives a number of complaints on those from neighbors, competitors, whatnot, on the actual number of animals being at a facility. So while a person should report that information and modify their permit, and that doesn't mean that it is done on a regular basis. This is one of our areas where we receive the most complaints on the feedlot permits, and that changing it to have this amount where we're having out there to try to count a specific animal units, it makes it not only very, makes it also very difficult to implement.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. If we're receiving a number of complaints now, it sounds like we have a problem. I guess I would ask Mr. Schoenfeld to step to the table and provide us with additional information.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
excuse me, Mr. Schoenfeld, Senator Engelbert.
Mr. Kadelka, if I could just ask a question. So if you get a complaint on the number of animal units that are expanding, you certainly have the authority to go in there and check that, do you or do not?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, yes, we do.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingalls.
So, Mr. Chair, with a follow-up then, so at that point in time, then you could trigger the actual confined animal unit with regards to permitting. Is that correct?
Mr. Kadelka.
Could you repeat the question?
Senator Ingalls. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And if a building, if feedlot number A is built to the capacity of 200 or 500 head, and they only put 200 head in there, it just seems to me that they should be paying for the 200 that they actually have, and I think this amendment certainly addresses that. However, if they go to any higher units, then they're subject to change or subject to actually having permits. So I'm not understanding why we would have something in law that's going to suppose that they have animal units there when they actually don't, and that they wouldn't have to pay for a permit fee unless the units are there. So, am I fairly accurate in this description of the amendment, Representative?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, I believe you are fairly accurate in that description. The numbers that trigger these events are not necessarily accurate, but the concept is. And one of the reasons for bringing this amendment forward is it's not only the animal capacity that's been involved. There's been a lawsuit involving a manure pit where a farmer decided to build a manure pit larger than the capacity he really needed because he had funds available and felt it was appropriate to have extra capacity in case of unforeseen events. And because that capacity was larger, PCA came in and said, well, your capacity is above the threshold, and therefore you need to do an EIS. Again, he had no intention of putting those extra animals in there, but because of the capacity of his manure pit, he was pressured and, in fact, forced to do an EIS.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pass. My question was answered.
Mr. Schoenfeld or Mr. Klavan, testimony?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Thank you. The issue here has been pretty much described. This came about because of the fact that there had been lawsuits brought where permits had been issued by counties, for instance, with conditional units permits that were under 1,000 animal units, and then lawsuits were brought forth because they said, well, it's the wrong capacity. And when the court looked at it, there was no definition in the statute that defined what capacity was. And so at that point, they determined that the capacity was not the animal units, which had traditionally been used, but instead it was a theoretical capacity that they could do. And I think Representative Torkelson properly stated it. If I decide to use 6 square foot per animal versus somebody else doing 8 square foot per animal, you know, then I'm going to have a different number of animals, and we think we should be permitted for those actual animals that we have.
Mr. Clavin, if you have anything to add, please identify yourself for the record.
Only if you need it.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota Turkey Growers, Broiler and Egg Association, some other ag groups. This has been covered. We think this is maybe a better approach. We worked with Representative Torkelson this afternoon on a definition versus the language you have in the side-by-side. That way there's a definition. Instead of using legal or physical that the judges struggled with, this is simply the definition. Capacity would mean the maximum you have or the maximum you propose to have. And if you're
Thank
over
you.
That, you're out of compliance.
Thank you. Additional comment, Mr. Kudalka? Members, all those in favor of the A11-0460 amendment, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative Torkelson, back to the R113 through R116. Representative Torkelson.
I believe, Mr. Chair, that's what we have just taken care of.
Okay.
I believe I'm done with my amendments, Mr. Chair. You can go on to your next victim.
Members, that would mean on our spreadsheet those sections would now be as they were amended. So they would be in as amended. Would that be correct, Ms. Taylor? I'm sorry. We'll take a second here. Can I ask you a question? You okay? Ms. Taylor, Representative Torkelson has now amended the R113 through R116. So when we adopt this spreadsheet, it would be per the, as amended. Okay, thank you. Are you good to go, Ms. Taylor? I believe we are down to the Senate section 48 line, if you want to pick up from there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are on Senate section 48 on R116 through R118. This is having to do with ethanol plant EAWs. It's our understanding this is an open issue at this time. I did see an amendment.
My understanding that will stay open, Ms. Taylor.
And Mr. Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Rosen.
Thank you.
Continue on, Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Rosen.
Sorry. I do have the amendment, so do you, would you
oh,
like
if you
to
have
discuss
an amendment for this section?
That right now for this
we should take it. That's
that
what we've been doing.
Okay.
Senator Rosen, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, it's the A13 amendment.
Senator Rosen would like to move the A13. Senator Rosen, if you could explain it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first part of it, the Section 10 that would go on R102, would expand the definition of ethanol to include the biobutanol facility. And why this is important is there is a whole emerging industry that's dealing with a new form of fuel, and it's called biobutanol, and there is some plants that are looking at being coming into Minnesota, converting some of these ethanol plants into biobutanol plants. So we feel it's very important to include this very high energy density fuel. It can be blended with gasoline at higher concentrations and used in existing vehicles and infrastructure. U.S. regulations allow biobutanol to be blended up to 16% by volume versus 10% for ethanol. And it can be blended directly at refineries and transported via existing fuel pipeline infrastructure. So this is, like I said, an emerging industry. We are very excited about this as far as the biofuels industry. The amendment, the first part, as I said, would expand this definition to include biobutanol. The second part, the section 49 on page R116, would change my language, the EAW, mandatory EAW for ethanol plants, to include the biobutanol language. And that would be on your amendment, members, page 2, line 2 to 3 and 4, just about, to include the biobutanol. And then there's also a change in the original language on line page 2, line 21, to go for a petition not less than 100 who reside at a property in the county or adjoining county where the proposed action will be located. So that is the changes. I am open for further changes, Mr. Knopf, or anything that I missed on this amendment.
Senator Rosen, could you explain to me the line 220 or make it a little more clear here, maybe to the members, on the number there, what it was in the past?
Well, currently, yes. The bill says that the current bill, as I passed out of committee, also says that not less than 25 can sign up to demand a mandatory EAW. And these 25 signatures can be from anywhere in the world. So we're just requesting that 100 of these individuals must reside or own property in the county or adjoining county where the proposed action will be located. This has actually been discussed for several years about how you could go anywhere and get signatures to demand a mandatory EAW. So we're just kind of clarifying that up.
Members, everybody understand that? Mr. Knopf, did you have some more clarity?
Mr. Chair, the only thing, I will point out that's also in Senator Dame's bill that's on the floor. I think it'll be up tomorrow. And I think the House is carrying that this language in the second section in the amendment. The only other thing I wanted to point out is there's a change to a repealer from earlier this session on 4.18 to 4.21. The concern is that in the agriculture bill, the definition of ethanol and ethanol plant was repealed, although the repealer was put off for 2 years, but it would cause problems for this amendment and then also even in current law. It was a department suggestion, but it went a little too far, so this would undo that repealer of the definitions.
Senator Rosen, is that clear?
I renew my motion to accept the... To move the A13 amendment.
Any further discussion? I guess there's somebody would like to testify. That's what?
Absolutely.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Patton. I'm Executive Director of the Environmental Quality Board. I just wanted to raise concerns about this amendment. I've testified in a couple committees on this already. The citizen petition process is an important safety valve for the environmental review system. There are thresholds for of size of the project that result in EAWs being mandatory. The citizen petition enables citizens to bring forward to the deciding, the responsible governmental unit, when they believe there are impacts of a project when that project is below a threshold. And it's kind of an important safety valve for the system. And so by raising the number of petitioners that's required by creating a residency requirement, it just makes it harder for people to raise those concerns. I'll point out that, a petition doesn't result in an EAW. It simply results in the petition being considered by the responsible governmental unit, and the case is decided on its merits of whether there may be a potential for significant adverse environmental impacts. There are relatively few of these. I think that it's in the order of 25 to 30 a year, and probably one out of five are approved. I don't know if there's been a real case made as far as a problem here in terms of, say, abuse of the system by people that are unrelated to a project. So I would just raise those concerns, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, any questions from the testifier? Seeing none. Anybody else would like to speak to the amendment? Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. A familiar face. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob Tammann from Sudan, Minnesota. And I thought I would speak to this because we had personal experience with this in Tower and Sudan area. We're only a couple of miles apart. The power company proposed to build a power line just south of Tower through some old growth cedar and course, not a lot of people knew about it, but it didn't take long. We whipped up a petition, 25 signatures, started the process. Things were moving a little bit. The power company, the DNR, concerned people got together. We snowshoed out, took a look at the old growth cedar. The power company said, yes, you're correct. We probably shouldn't build a power line. They moved it a mile or so. The fact that we had this procedure, that we quickly rounded up 25 signatures, the power company started listening to us, the problem was solved without any further action being taken. The power company agreed with us. Thank you.
A question, did you have 25 signatures?
It took a little while to round them up because we're a small community up there. We don't have a lot of population. We had our 25 signatures, a couple extra. I suppose we had enough enthusiasm to eventually round up 100, but I think the final result would have been the same. It was a pretty interesting situation. It's one of those deals where perhaps a power company didn't do a comprehensive survey of the cedar there. So once we got people involved, the DNR took a look at it. They had a DNR office right there in Tower. So they had somebody that was quite familiar with the forestry issues. They could document that, yes, this did meet the requirements for old growth cedar. So there was not a great deal of contention about it. Once we got the attention of the power company, they said, yeah, we'll move the power line. So it went no farther than that, and we think the process worked quite well for us. We'd like to see it stay that way in case we want it in the future again.
So the reason I asked that question, it sounded like you just grabbed somebody and walked up there by yourself with their snowshoes up there by yourself.
No.
The process worked without having the 25. Senator Rosen?
No, we needed the signatures. We sent the paperwork in. Once the process started, then the power company said, well, let's go take a look at this. And I suppose there's probably eight of us went out there and looked at it. We had the power company, a couple of DNR people, and I forget who was all out there at the time. But we were happy the way the process worked.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I should say that at any time a local government or a state agency can order a discretionary EAW, and when the mandatory EAWs were put in place, it was in 1982, I believe, when these ethanol plants were extremely small. And now you have strict regulations, air, water, so forth. And so air emissions, water discharge, water appropriation from the PCA and the DNR. So at any time, they can come in and say, we want to do an EAW. It's just not mandatory. The Senate, the citizens' petition, I think, is fair because it should be 100 signatures from the counties or counties surrounding it that are affected and not from various other locations, which I think could happen.
Okay. Members, any other questions with regards to the amendment? Hearing none, Senator Rosen renews her motion to move A13 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Ms. Taylor, do you want to continue? I believe we're on Senate Section 49.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. It's the Mississippi River Corridor critical area, and it's our understanding the Senate position would be moved on this.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Discussion. Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify, because when we went through the repealers, we had those as blank, but there are repealers that are connected with this. And as my understanding is that along with this on R-119, you're including the repealers that go along with it.
Mr. Knopf, why don't we, and I thought there might have been a couple different spots on that. Ms. Noah, is this the only one?
There are some repealers, and then there's another section later on. It's actually on the same page if you look at Senate Section 57.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Additional discussion? Continue, Ms. Taylor.
The next section, Senate Section 50 on R-119, the DNR Law Enforcement Agency, CIBRS. It's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Continue, Ms. Taylor.
And then on R-119, R-120, the DNR use of silencers, it's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Correct.
And then on R-120 and 121, the Coon Rapids Dam Commission, it's our understanding the Senate position would be moved.
Continue.
The next section, R-121, Section 54 on Lake Pepin Phosphorus Standard, it's our understanding.
Ms. Taylor, that will be the Senate position.
Okay. Then next section, then, on R-121, the Terry McCormick.
That will be the Senate position, too, Ms. Taylor. Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, it was the R-21 Terry McGoffey Memorial Bridge.
Yep.
Correct. It is, Ms. Taylor, also in our, I believe, in a couple different spots there. Mr. McGahey was big on the Paul Bunyan Trail, and I guess we want to make sure that he gets recognition for the extremely nice bridge over the frontage road on the north side of Highway 210 in Baxter. Continue on, Ms. Taylor.
The next section, Senate Section 56 on R-121, Mississippi River Management Plan. That's our understanding this would be handled elsewhere.
Continue.
R-121 and R-22, this is another section on the Mississippi River Corridor critical area that was pointed out by Senate Council. It's our understanding of taking the Senate position.
Yes.
R-122, the Spearing on Cass Lake section, it's our understanding this would be handled elsewhere.
Correct. Continue.
R-122, the state tree nursery closure, it's our understanding there's an amendment.
Yes. Ms. Taylor, I have the A46 amendment. Members, it deals with the DNR tree nursery that Senator Peterson's been working real hard on. Senator Peterson, I appreciate your good work. I've been nervous about some of the implications, and we've worked with DNR. There's a couple of different, any questions? Members, there's a couple of members have some oral amendments. Why don't I first go to Representative Dill, if you could direct us to your oral amendments. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I'd like to make an oral amendment to the A46 amendment. If you look down in Section C on line 1.21, it says that the $500,000 from the Forest Nursery account go to the general fund. And I believe that should read the Forest Management Investment Account. So I would strike general fund in on that line and put the, I'm going to call it the FMIA. That's for the acronym for Forest Management Investment Account. Also, the same occurrence on line 1.23, where it says general fund, put in Forest Management Account, and then put a period, and then strike all of the language from the word if through line 1.26.
Representative Dill, questions of the Dill oral amendment? Ms. Taylor, could you repeat the amendment?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, on line 1.21, delete general fund and insert forest management investment account. And on line 1.23, delete general fund and insert forest management investment account. And delete everything after the period. And delete lines 1.24 through 1.26.
I think, Ms. Taylor, we are going to actually take